Ladies and gentlemen, I'm David Hartman. Please welcome retired Army Captain Doc Clements, retired Army Colonel Charles Finch, and retired Army Colonel, now PhD Doctor, Bill Reeder. Gentlemen, cat killers. What are the cat killers?
Cat killers was our call sign, the 220th Reconnaissance Aircraft Company, and that was our call sign. And I was cat killer 1-8. Charlie was 1-9.
So you were together, right, in Vietnam. But Charlie, you and Bill go back a long way, yeah?
Yeah, we went to flight school in October of 67, graduated in July of 68. Then he went to fly Mohawks.
Right. Yeah, so Charlie and I go back almost 50 years when we started flight school together.
Oh, boy. What did you do? Here's this airplane. This does not look like an airplane you want to go to war in. Right?
Right.
So describe this plane that you flew.
He was our instructor pilot, so Doc was one of our finest pilots there, so you've got it, champ.
This airplane is a takeoff from a Cessna 170. It's got the same wing, same tail, same gear as the 170. It's just got a different fuselage. It's a little bit narrow, tandem seat. The 170 had a 145-horse engine. This has 213 horses. Stateside, this airplane would climb initially about 1,500 feet a minute, so it was a nice bush airplane, really. But in Vietnam, you can see all the antennas on it, see the rockets and rocket tubes. Then we had to carry parachutes, whether we used them or not, and just extra weight on there. But mainly I tell people, all these antennas just slow us down a little bit so we aren't too fast, you know. It was about 100 miles an hour. And when you got shot at, the best way to evade the fire was to get up and run around the cockpit. You know? So, but anyhow, it would take a lot of hits. It had 40 gallons of fuel, 20 in each wing, self-sealing tanks on it. And we would switch the fuel every 30 minutes just in case we took rounds in one of them that would have fuel in the other one, and we didn't try to drain one tank out and then fly on the other one.
Generally, how long could you stay up?
About 4 hours, four and a half if you right. stretched it right in there. And then you basically had two Willie Pete rockets, which is white phosphorus, and they're 2.75, and we had those so we can mark the target for the jets, when we say fast movers, and the TAC air, that's the jets coming down. So when we want to mark a target, put a bomb in, we throw the rocket out there and it puts up white smoke. And you say, okay, from my hit on your run-in heading, let's go 12 o'clock 50 meters with your first bomb. And that's what we use the rockets on. And also, I don't know if this one has it or not, but on the side, we had three hand grenades, smoke grenades, rather.
Yeah, smoke.
Yeah. When we're talking to the jets circling around down there, they can't see us. So sometimes we pop one of those smokes and they trail out red, and then they can see the trailing red smoke, then they get us in sight. So that's basically the airplane, what we did.
So Charlie, where were you two based?
We're based in Phu Bai, but we flew our missions out of Dong Ha, which was right on the DMZ. So
the DMZ, demilitarized zone between North and South Vietnam.
Right. When they talk about the DMZ, and I'm not going to make a political statement, but what happened, the way they decided to fight this war, when I got there and Doc was there first, but if you can just visualize a 2 to 3 mile border on the Binhai River. And they said, we can't put American troops into North Vietnam. Now, let's just assume that you guys are living in North Vietnam and you're our enemy. You can come all the way down to here before I can get a Marine to shoot at you.
We're in the DMZ.
Right? Correct.
That's so the Binhai River.
Right. The demilitarized zone actually had more troops than the non-demilitarized area, if you will. It was crazy. Let me just set this up for Doc, because he taught me, but I'm going to tell him what he didn't teach me. When I got there in July of 68, we heard all these things about, at that time, this platoon that Doc was flying in were called the Mythmakers. And they flew out of Dong Ha, and there was about 9 officers. We had great commanders, Major Jim Wisby and Major Ed Myler, but they basically let us fly unsupervised. And the reason you had to do that is because they're going to give Doc this airplane with 4 Willie Phosphorus rockets and a whole bunch of smoke grenades and going to put a back seat. And his job is to go to North Vietnam and find out where all the artillery pieces are that are firing into South Vietnam on our Marines in Leatherneck Square and where we lived in Dong Ha. So tell them what normal mission was when you went up North Vietnam.
Basically, up there at Dong Ha, we start getting hit from North Vietnam with their heavy artillery. They would fire it in several times. I was called at Dong Ha, and I would run to the airplane, take off, close the door, and strap in once I was airborne going against the guns, because I knew that they brought the guns down. They usually bring it down about 6 at a time. And they would actually tie these guys to the guns and wouldn't let them leave. And they just kept firing. And we knew we had to knock those guns out in order to stop the fire, because they wouldn't stop as long as they were operating. So we go up into North Vietnam. Now, nobody ever told us what kind of ordnance they were going to shoot at with us or anything else. You know, it was a big surprise. And I had to learn how to fly against the flak and the quad 50s. You'd see a beehive, a green beehive coming at you. And those are quad 50s. I've been hosed down at 5,000 feet with those things. And you get over there and you're trying to call in artillery from our bases along the DMZ to knock out these guns. And then sometimes I would have tactical air, the jets, with bombs, and I'd bring them in to knock them out. But it was exciting times up there then, because nobody told us what we were up against. They just said, go get them.
So when I get there, I get a great guy, maintenance officer, takes me up to, shows me where North Vietnam is, and this was my orientation, an hour and a half, and I'd only had 40 hours. Was it 40 hours, Bill, we got in the bird dog before we went over there?
40 hours in the bird dog.
40 hours. And we were talking about being unsupervised, and I said, okay. So these guys were fairly successful in knocking out the artillery when we got there. Well, the North Vietnamese, great enemy, very, very clever. They decided to bring more anti-aircraft down to be able to shoot people down like Doc so that they could defend their artillery positions, so they could continue to support their NVA going into South Vietnam with their artillery. So when I got there, all of a sudden, as far as trying to knock out the artillery pieces, now Doc and I both had to decide, what's the priority? Do you knock out an artillery piece or the anti-aircraft that's shooting at you every day? Well, we figured that out real quick.
Let me point something out. This guy right here was probably the best combat pilot we had.
Thank you, Doc. It's because you had gotten so scared that I had to take your place.
Oh, what it was. First mission I took him up on, they oriented him on the DMZ.
Wait, excuse me, Doc. Does that mean you never got scared? Charlie?
We all got scared. If you're not
everybody got
scared. Yeah.
Well, no, anyway, go ahead. I'm sorry I interrupted, Doc.
But I took him up on his first mission. He was, down below me, and I was watching him. I'd tell him, okay, there's the mouth of Ben High River, and we're going on up, and he goes down and dives down on the mouth of Ben High River. Well, I just got hosed down the day before with quad 50s. And I hollered for him to get out of here. He said, nobody's shooting at me. And he just like he was on the Sunday drive. Well, he got educated next time, though.
This is one other thing about visual reconnaissance is we were out to find the enemy and defeat the enemy. But because the game was kind of tilted in North Vietnamese, remember, they had a mission is to keep coming south and keep clearing out America. When I got over there, and David, you mentioned today, the buildup was 536 to 544,000 people. We were losing 310 American people a day when I got there. And there was, where Doc and I were at, they had kind of like a morgue at Phu Bai. So we were seeing the light green bags of our dead soldiers being shipped to another morgue and then on to the United States for burial. But that was very sobering because, you know, in the United States, we had already heard about the anti-war people. But when we got there and realized the suffering that was going on for our American soldiers, it made everything that we did in the cat killers, because nobody could control the airspace up there except for us as far as defeating the enemy. So there was, this is how silly the mission was. They had a high ship and a low ship to go fly up in North Vietnam. Well, why do you think they had a ship up here? It's that when we went and were shot down, they would know where we got shot down at. And that's why they called it a two-ship mission. And that kind of gets your attention. We had, and this
air... Let me point something out on this first platoon up there where we were. Charlie was only the married guy up there. The rest of us were all bachelors because they figured they'd lose a bunch of us, didn't want to lose the married men, but he volunteered.